We're getting there. All right, I think we are live. Hello and good afternoon, everyone. It is Angie Atkinson, and I am here with the lovely and talented Dana Morningstar for our usual Tuesday live stream. If you are new around here, then you will not know that we do this every week, usually. And we alternate channels between this channel, my channel, Angie Atkinson, and her channel, which is called Thrive After Abuse, right here on YouTube. You can also find Dana all around the internet at Thrive After Abuse on Facebook, and she's got a really good support group, thriveafterabuse.com, Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. So make sure that you look at Dana's stuff. Dana, welcome back.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Happy to have you, as always. I have to fix my sound here. Okay, there we go. Okay. All right, so today we thought we would talk about narcissists and kind of look inside their heads a little bit, get a little insight into their psychology. And we thought we would start off with some of the questions and comments from last week. So Dana, do you want to start us off?
Sure. And just as a reminder, or I guess to let you guys know, if you guys are new here, if you have questions or comments that you want Angie and I to bring up in these live streams, please comment below after the video goes live and is available to watch on YouTube, and we will do our best to address them. So with that said, let me get on over to the questions. Okay, so this fits in perfectly with kind of the mindset of a narcissist. This is from Blue Morpho, who asks, my narcissistic ex, or my nex, would text other supply after we had sex, and it made me feel that I was not enough. He told me he's emotionally unavailable. Can you talk more about emotional unavailability and narcissists?
Yeah. I have some thoughts about that. May I?
Yeah. Okay. Go right ahead.
Thank you. So I've actually, I've got a client who actually was talking to me about something similar, but different. Anyway, she had been dating a guy who she had decided was emotionally unavailable due to, she'd been reading about somebody had a blog called Emotionally Unavailable Men. And what it turns out is that pretty much every symptom that she listed was also something we could correlate with narcissism on some level. So I think what it comes down to is that someone who, you know, claims or someone who we might deem emotionally unavailable might be someone who could fit into this toxic person category that we kind of cover over here. So what I have seen is, I think every narcissist is emotionally unavailable up to a point, right? Because if you look at it from the perspective of the fact that they don't have emotional or compassionate empathy, for example, they only have cognitive empathy. So they might appear to have some real empathy when you first meet them. In fact, I can't tell you how many narcissists I've met who've claimed to be empaths, ironically.
Yeah.
You know, so, but as far as the texting the other, you know, old supplies or whatever after intimacy, I think that is a blatant devalue in a way. I think it's an attempt to make you feel not good enough, an attempt to make you doubt yourself, feel insecure, so that you might think no one else would want you. And that's really unfortunate. And I would guess there's a lot of other psychology there. Dana, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. You know, it could be him texting other women like right after sex is just, I think at a minimum, it just shows his staggering lack of indifference. And I had a friend who was married to a guy like this and is in the process of going through a divorce. And it was just soul crushing that his level of just indifference, he just did not care. And it was soul crushing for her. And it was heartbreaking for me to watch that as it went on, as I think anybody that's ever watched somebody be in such a one-sided relationship like this goes, and there's so many just solid, good catches out there that would make, yeah, that are emotionally available and that want to have a relationship, and, you know, that are just solid, decent people that get tangled up with these kinds of people. And I guess at the end of the day, it's so important to just know your worth and to not settle. And as far as narcissists being emotionally unavailable, that's definitely par for the course, kind of by definition. It's all about them all of the time. And when you have that, when a person's all about them all of the time, there's no room for anybody else. So even if they're not malicious or intentional or cruel, if they're so self-absorbed that they're just only focused on their pain, their problems, their life, getting their wants and needs met, anybody that's in their inner circle or in their life is going to feel really starved out. And this kind of just goes back to the whole, you know, being chosen or being choosy. And it's so important that we take the time to be choosy in who we choose to invest our emotions in, because like I mentioned before, there is no greater pain than kind of trying to overcompensate for the lack of emotions in somebody else by pouring extra emotion into it, thinking like, okay, well, if I just give them more love and reassurance and, you know, and all compassion and empathy and all of these things, then surely they're going to be able to meet me halfway. And it's not. It's just pouring water into a bucket full of holes.
Yep, 100%. Totally agree. Do you want to, wait a minute, do you want to weave in questions from the chat, or do we want to go through these first and then come back?
However you want to do it.
All right, well, let's pull in a question from the chat, shall we?
Okay.
All right. I have one from Cecilia, and she says, my narcissist just told me to believe his lies and we would not have problems. His truth is different than science truth, and I need to and I need to learn how to understand him more, ? I think she's making a comment more than anything, and obviously that's, you know,
I love that.
I do too. His truth is different than science truth. Yeah. He defies physics and all the things, laws of gravity, all the things. Yeah.
All at once. Yeah.
I like that, but no, I totally get it. Actually, I can't tell you how many times I have over the years had conversations with people that made me think something very simple. Like, are you serious? This is basic stuff. It's not funny at all when you're in the middle of it. It's funny when we can look back at it and laugh at our own experiences that might've been similar. Right. Mm-hmm. But the way you put it was pretty
it
fun.
It was funny the way you put it. Yeah,
it was. Yeah. Dana, any thoughts on this?
Yeah. Well, you know, trying to understand, you've probably seen this meme going around the internet. It says something along the lines of trying to understand some people's behavior is like trying to smell the color nine. Or trying to smell the number nine. Yeah. And it's exactly that. It's so nonsensical that that's the problem with it. So you can't apply reasonable thinking to irrational, unreasonable thought. So what you're seeing when somebody is that unreasonable and they're not logical, right? Their truth is not factual, it's just in their head, and they're continuing to rewrite reality on the fly of, you know, they were cheating because this other woman showed up pregnant and has a DNA test, right? That shows they are the father, and they're still denying it. And, you know, they're blaming everybody else, and they're coming up with crazier and crazier stories and this kind of stuff. There has to be a point, there really has to be, to protect your sanity, to cut there comes a point in time where talking has to just stop, because the issue here isn't with communication. The issue here is with somebody who's a pathological liar and you're not sharing the same reality with them. So adding more conversation to the mix is only going to further confuse things, because they're just going to keep saying words to try to get out of whatever consequences are coming downstream. There is no relationship possible with a person like that.
Right.
There's craziness. There's crazy making. There's frustration. There's a lot of hurt and heartache, but there's no real relationship possible. Because for a real relationship to be possible, you need that open, honest, sincere, solutions-oriented communication all at the same time.
Yeah.
not in a slow drip kind of a method.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I would add, you know, just simply that this is more common than you would think, just like Dana just described to you. And I think that it's infuriating. It makes you, this is part of the crazy making right here. Like, and you start to doubt yourself, like, wait a minute, is it possible that she really did sit on a toilet seat, that he had been near at one point in the world and suddenly she's pregnant? I mean, is it possible, you know, like whatever story he's making up. But the point being, I mean, most people don't actually get to that level.
I don't know. I was right, just thinking that was a really great example of the some of the extremes that they'll go to. I mean, right. They will continue to deny it. And then it goes on, oh, it must just be the Immaculate Conception part two.
Yes.
And then, oh, it's just aliens. It must be aliens. Or it could be a toilet seat. I mean, there was this one story back in 1988 and this one woman in Thailand, and you're like, you know, and they're throwing out all the stops. But that's when it comes down to, there has to be a point where, and I've mentioned this before, I swear, one of the best things I ever did for myself was to just make my new standards in life. Like, I don't participate in situations that are chronically crazy making or perpetually confusing. Mm-hmm. I can't do it. It's bad for my mental health. And if that situation can't be, because really sincere, sane conversations or misunderstandings or things that happen can be cleared up usually in less than 5 minutes.
Right.
So if it's stuff that continues to go on and on and on, there has to be a point where we're like, you know what? I can't play Columbo over here or detective and try to unravel all of this. It just doesn't stop with this person. It's craziness after craziness. And I'm losing sleep. I'm losing weight. I'm gaining weight. I'm falling apart emotionally trying to make sense of everything. And that doesn't work. That doesn't work.
Right. And on another note, I think this is the thing. Let me just give you a little bit of advice, Cecilia. Mm-hmm. Assuming that you're still in the relationship based on your comment, my advice is let him lie to you. Pretend to believe him as often as you can stand to pretend. And the reason I say this is because this allows him to underestimate you and your ability to see through the BS. And that gives you the upper hand. So just keep that in mind. If he needs to tell you some big story that you know is complete crap, just, oh, wow, okay, uh-huh, mm-hmm. And just know the truth. And I hope you're working toward freeing yourself. And if you are, this will be a little extra ammunition, a little extra kick to help you, if nothing else, or at least, you know, I think it's important to not try to show them everything, all your cards, you know. And if you just let them say whatever they want to say within reason, right? I'm not saying you should let them physically hurt you or you should let them actively, you know, do things directly to you. But if they're telling you made up lies and you know they're made up lies, just pretend you believe them, because then they tell on themselves as time goes on, you know. Anyway, any thoughts on that, Dana?
Yeah, it just depends on the situation. You know, I think if you make your North Star, I don't do things that put my mental, emotional, physical, or financial health in danger.
Mm. Yes.
Like, I don't do that.
Yeah. And I think that's the bottom line.
Yeah. The bottom line. If you make that your North Star, that'll give you all the clarification that you need. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're having to play kind of games like that, and there are times to have to play games to get away from some of these people, because they don't have, many of them don't have a conscience, and they're highly manipulative, they're very exploitative, and some people can get really tangled up pretty deep in it, and it can be very difficult to leave. So sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do in order to get out safely.
Exactly.
But if this, you know, if you're able to just leave now,
do it.
You know, the sooner you can get out of that bear trap, the better off you are.
And 100%.
Yeah, because it is. There's nothing there. And that's a hard reality to kind of wrap your mind around. But it's all smoke and mirrors. It's the fantasy. Mm-hmm. That's what keeps us hooked. It's the fantasy of who they were in the beginning when they were mm-hmm. on their best behavior, or who we hope they could be, or
the person
who
they promised us.
Yeah. Or just our own kind of maybe naive ideas about relationships. I mean, I know from my perspective, I just thought we all were subscribing to the same point of view when it came to marriage or monogamy or commitment. It did not even cross my mind that a lot of the stuff that people do, it was just not on my radar of possibility. Right. So it's important to see other people's behavior for what it is, not how we think that it should be.
I 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. You got another one for us from last week?
Last week, sure. This is from Jay, mm-hmm. who asks, hey, any ideas for divorcing a narcissist when you still have your clothes and belongings in the house?
So is it their clothes or your clothes? What's happening?
I am guessing it's
you're going
through a divorce. You're in the same house, but you've probably moved out, but your stuff's all in the house that they're still in.
Okay. Well, in that case, I mean, here's the thing, you know, you can still file for divorce. Depending on your situation, a lot of times you can have a police escort come with you to get your stuff. And they will either make the person leave the house or stand outside the house while you go in with an officer to get your stuff. That's one possibility. Another possibility is, you know, you could ask them to put it all out for you, but of course, then they'll probably keep half the things you own. I think it would be ideal to probably do this without a whole bunch of warning, maybe, depending on the situation. But I think ultimately, stuff is just stuff. And if there's something there that you absolutely need to have that you can't replace, you know, your grandma's china or something like that, then do what you need to do or try to. But if there's something that, you know, if it's just your clothes and you're able to replace them, maybe you want to replace them. I don't know. Dana, what are your thoughts about this?
Yeah, it can be really difficult. I agree. I guess here's my plan with this kind of stuff is I'm a big proponent of erring on the side of caution mm-hmm. and kind of planning for the worst and hoping for the best. So it's especially so in these types of situations. Now is not the time to hope, boy, I really hope their personality does a 180 and they become this mature, responsible, reasonable, balanced person. Mm-hmm. Because if anybody's ever going to be unbalanced, unpredictable, highly emotional and reactive, it's going to be in situations like this. And that goes for the best of us.
Yep.
So think about a person who's already kind of unhinged and unbalanced. It just adds fuel to the fire. So I would prepare ahead of time for that. I would anticipate that. I would put it in writing. You're going to want to create a paper trail. So giving them some sort of notice, probably at least 24 hours notice. Again, Angie and I don't have all the details of, right. you know, do you have access to the property? Is there a restraining order? Like what's going right. on? But I would send them an email as well as a text message saying that you'd like to come by in like the next 36 hours mm-hmm. to pick up your stuff. These are the items that you'll be wanting. You know, you can bring your own boxes or, you know, what have you. And then I would call the non-emergency police and see if they have time to do a civil standby. So it helps if you prepare with them ahead of time too and say, hey, I need to go over to my ex's house. It's been a very volatile situation. I want to be proactive. You know, if I'm planning on going over there at 2:00 on Tuesday, could an officer meet me in front of the house just to do a civil standby? And when you're getting your stuff, again, you want to treat this whole situation like you would have to defend it on a Judge Judy episode. So you want to mind your P's and Q's. It's you're polite, you're pleasant, you're brief, you're in, you're out. You're not going with a scorched earth approach of I'm going to leave a can of tuna fish in your air vent do you know what I mean? Or I'm going to break a bunch of stuff on the way out, or I'm going to give you my final say. Just keep it professional, get your stuff and get out of there and get on with your life.
100%. Yep. Yeah. Okay. We just did that one. Okay. I have another one from the chat if you would like.
Go for it.
All right, we have this from Rocio. I assume I'm saying it right. I'm sorry if I'm not.
Okay.
Who asks, my question was, why won't he see his three kids? Almost 8 months, no contact, and it hurts my five-year-old. And then I don't know how to respond to my five-year-old that his dad is gone. That is a very difficult situation. So let me just say, to start off with, I want to say I'm really sorry that's happening. And I would say that, well, I'll tell you this story really quick. So when when my son was four, my oldest, we had been separated from his father, birth father, from which was my ex-husband, by the way. We called him a sperm donor later, but that was just me and some of my friends. But anyway, not to the child. Sorry. Anyway, the point is, one day he was at preschool. We had left when he was 16 months old. And by the time he was two, my ex didn't come around. He kind of forgot him already. And I know this because we looked at a picture, but I digress. So one day after preschool, my son says to me, "Mom, why don't I have a dad?" And I said, "What, you know?" And he said, "Because all the other kids at school have dads and I don't have a dad. Why don't I have a dad?" And I said, and I really didn't know what to say. And so yeah. I tried to kind of just tide him over, and I went and saw my therapist, you know, and I said, "Well, you know, this kid's 23 today, by the way." And I said, "Well," I said to the therapist, "what am I supposed to say? I don't know what to say. I don't want to say the wrong thing." And the therapist said, "Listen, you need to tell him the truth as much as he is capable of understanding at his age." Right. So I had to tell him that his father had the right to see him and chose not to, but that I would always be there for him, and that that would be okay. You know, that he'd always have me, I'd always have his back, et cetera. And basically that was it. So I did, I told him, and we cried together. It was very difficult. It's not easy, but at this point it's been 8 months. Your kid still remembers him because he was, you know, he's five. So you have to tell him the truth as much as he's capable of understanding. You don't have to say anything bad about his dad. You just have to say, you know, your dad's got something else going on right now. He's obviously having some trouble. You know, he does have the right to see you. I would be happy to let him see you. He chooses not to be here. And I know that feels like something you don't want to say to your child, but the way the therapist explained it to me was that if I told him the truth in this way, you know, number one, they usually do understand a little more than we think they do. And number two, they need to know the truth, because otherwise they might resent you. They might think that you're the one causing dad not to be there, and they need to know that that's not the case. So I don't know if that's the advice you want to take, but that's the advice I was given, and it worked for my child. So thoughts, Dana?
Yeah. And I would add to that, I would encourage you to validate your child's emotions.
Yes.
So kind of continuing along the lines of what Angie was saying, I agree, be honest about it and let them know. But then I would also say something like, I know that must really hurt, or that must be confusing as to why all these other kids have their dad around and you don't. And I would imagine that makes you feel kind of sad or mad. And if you want to talk about your feelings, we can talk about them, you know. And you know, if you were to say that, yeah, your dad's not around, and you know, for whatever reason, your dad's not around, and that it's okay for you to have hurt feelings or to have to feel the way that you feel about that. But your dad's not around, but it has nothing to do with you. Like, you're a neat kid. There's so much that's right about you, and your dad has his own issues and stuff. And I'm sorry that you have to pay the price for that.
100%. Absolutely agree with you. Yeah. And you're right. It's so important to validate their feelings. And I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. What is our next, do you have another one for us?
Yeah, this is kind of a random one. Well, somebody wanted to know, this is from Salon, who said, "I'm sorry if I'm not aware if something happened. Angie just looked really upset in this live stream, on the verge of tears. Can someone tell me if she's okay? I hope whatever Angie's going through passes. I'm sending her compassionate vibes." So Angie, was there?
No, I don't think there was anything major. I just remembered as you were reading that though, Dana, that I did get a weird text message at that time during the stream. So maybe that's what she was talking about. But it was not like it was fine. It
okay.
just confused me, I think. And so maybe I looked upset or confused, but I apologize. I'm good.
Okay. Well, worries. We're glad to hear that you're okay. I kind of felt bad when I read the comment. I thought, oh my gosh, I didn't even pick up on that. Angie, are you okay?
Do you
need to talk?
No, I'm good. I'm all right. Don't worry. Okay. Healthy and all that, you know. Yeah. Sometimes my confused face looks sad. I think I have one of those. I get in trouble for my faces a lot. You know. Anyway, all right. Let's see. I have one from Honey Child.
Okay.
I like that. Honey Child. Mm-hmm. Okay. Said, I feel like my ex-narcissist put a spell on me. He has a dark personality, but in January, I will be apart from him for a year. So far, I cannot stop thinking about him. And I think that's more common than you think. I think what you're looking at is trauma bonding, my guess, it's literally almost like you're addicted to him physically and mentally, almost. It's the same part of the brain that's affected as drug addiction, alcohol addiction, et cetera. I think it's more normal than you think, but recognizing it is definitely the first step to moving away from it. There are a lot of things you can do, but one thing I have seen a lot of people not do, and I myself did not do it at first, was a lot of people don't want to grieve the relationship because it sucked or because there were parts of it that they didn't like. And so they just want to move on and be happy. Well, unfortunately, we still have to grieve it even if we don't think we do. And I think that's taking the time to let yourself feel the feelings will help. And then, you know, working through the feelings. And then once you've done that, you know, then working on pattern interrupts and stuff for in the moment stuff. But outside of that, I would say it's a process. It takes time. And I wouldn't beat yourself up about it. Dana, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I guess I would be curious to know why you think he's put a spell on you and what kind of things are you noticing? I will say, like Angie was saying, this is not abnormal. There's been quite a few people. I even experienced this. I dated somebody in high school who just had the darkest energy, I think, of anybody that I've ever met. And I still 30 years later, almost 30 years later, get creeped out when I think about him. And I really felt that, and I know it sounds really wild to anybody that hasn't experienced this, or maybe it even sounds wild hearing me talk about this because I don't subscribe to, I don't know, I'm very kind of grounded in science and logic and reason and not of the kind of supernatural realm so much, but it felt like that. And I was scared to even say his name because I was afraid he would show up because it was kind of this uncanny thing where, you know, if I was thinking about him or say his name, it kind of never failed. He'd show up. And this was back in the day before there was tracking or recording or even cell phones or the internet for that matter. This was, you know, way back when. So there are some people with super dark energy. And I think when we haven't ever experienced, and let me back up, when we say dark energy, I think what we're really trying to explain or capture is a lack of empathy, a lack of remorse, a lack of compassion, a lack of sincerity. It's that intra-predatory behavior that isn't seen.
Yeah.
It's, you know, what makes a person human is that the empathy, the remorse, the connection, the sincerity, the bonding, and psychopathic people don't have that. And when we get a glimpse of that absolute, there's nothing behind those eyes. That's just that blackness there of, they just don't care. It's so shocking and it's so terrifying because we just realize this isn't a human being as how I understand a human being to be. And so kind of all bets are off. Our whole world map about how to keep ourselves safe is out the window around people like this, because all of these platitudes and messages that we've been taught about relationships and commitment and love and forgive and forget and do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. And, you know, kind of love conquers all of that is going to put a person smack in harm's way around a real predatory person like that. So it's common for a lot of confusion to surround these dynamics with these kinds of people. as far as you're feeling he put a spell on you, I guess in this day and age, I just don't believe in stuff like that. He might say he did, but I wouldn't give him that kind of power, because the reality is if spells and stuff worked, we'd have results to prove that they work. Right. And the science behind it is you can cast spells all day long, and it's just like anything else. Sometimes you're going to get results, sometimes you're not. But I can wear my favorite sweatshirt to an ice hockey game. Sometimes my team wins, sometimes my team doesn't win. It doesn't mean that my sweatshirt
has anything or isn't. To do with it.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So I just wouldn't give him any more power or that he than he deserves, and he deserves zero.
I agree. And I would just add that I read this differently than you did, because I thought it was like a, you know, like a metaphor or something, but you're right. I might not have been right on that. So, go ahead.
I was gonna say, but I do think you're right about the trauma bond feeling, that feeling of this person put a spell on me, as to why do I keep thinking about them? Why can't I move forward? Why do I feel addicted to them? Why do they have this hold over me?
Yeah.
That part of it, I think you're spot on. That it exactly is. It has to do with the trauma bonds.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I also want to point out really quick, Druid made a comment that I wanted to just, it's just this big, says, remember, it works both ways. Not all narcissists are male, and not all empaths are female. Agreed. Never question that. Totally agree with that. And on top of that, I would say not all victims might be considered empaths, or not all codependents, you know, because some codependents are narcissists. But anyway, okay. Dana, do you have another? Go ahead.
That's a really fantastic point that you make. No, I don't have anything more from the chat, but I do have one from today's chat.
Okay.
Okay, this is from Kay Mitty, who says, I think BPD, so borderline personality disorder, and NPD, narcissistic personality disorder, are drawn to each other. But it seems like I am wondering if I am the narcissist. Thoughts?
Yes. A couple things. Usually, and you know, not 100% of the time, but usually if you are wondering if you're the narcissist, there's a good chance you're not, because you're more self-aware than a standard narcissist. With that being said, I think very often, and this is just my personal opinion, let me just throw a disclaimer out here, just a personal opinion, not a medical one. But what I see a lot of times is I believe that they often misdiagnose PTSD or CPTSD as BPD, right? So complex post-traumatic stress disorder, whatever. And the reason I think that is because a couple things. Number one, a lot of times we don't know that we're dealing with someone who might be a narcissist, or they don't understand that we're dealing with an emotional or psychological abuser. And so that's going to color the way that we come across to the therapist. And what I found in interviewing several therapists and having several psychologists and psychiatrist clients over the years, being that they don't teach them about this, or they didn't back in the day. I don't know what they're doing today, but they didn't teach them about emotional abuse or narcissistic abuse on the level to which we experience it. So I think that's part of it. Now, you know, we see them coming into the field now talking about it because various reasons that I will not mention today, because I'm a positive person. So with that being said, Dana, what are your thoughts?
Yes. Okay. Like you said, there's, I think certain disorders do get misdiagnosed. There's also overlap. So I think a person can have, I know a person can have both PTSD and or CPTSD and or BPD. So the difference is with BPD is it's the personality disorder versus trauma. So PTSD and they versus CPTSD. So those are more of what's thought of as trauma response, but you could make the same case for BPD also being a trauma response. So the main difference is really, or I should say, let me start with the overlap. The overlap between all three of those, BPD, PTSD, CPTSD, is reactivity, emotional reactivity. So you tend, although in PTSD, sometimes it can be a lack of emotional reactivity, but more often than not, it's a person is just kind of a live wire. They're very easily upset. They go from 0 to 10 really quickly. There's kind of a lack of ability to self-regulate. So they feel all of the feelings intensely all of the time. It's, I would imagine, a very difficult way to live. With borderline personality disorder, one of the main things that sets that apart is really related to like an anxious style of attachment. So there's intense fears of abandonment that and everything that goes along with it. So it's chronic thoughts of I'm bad, or I'm somehow unlovable, or somebody's going to leave me. If I really show who I am, they're going to leave me. Everything means everything, like kind of all paths lead to I'm not good enough and I'm not lovable and somebody's going to leave me. And so then they become in this mad scramble to keep relationships going. And then this ties into this intense emotionality, which often leads to a lot of self-harm and suicidal feelings. And this is why that therapy, dialectical behavioral therapy, can be so helpful, because it teaches emotional regulation skills and it's geared towards kind of empowering somebody to learn how to kind of self-soothe with all of that. But the attraction, in my opinion, between borderline personality disorder and narcissists, or borderlines and narcissists, is narcissists, I think, can kind of tickle those vulnerabilities in anybody, but especially in somebody with BPD, where if the narcissist comes across as really aloof, domineering, difficult to please, if a person with BPD kind of grew up in that home, then that's something that they're comfortable with. Like, oh, and it's more of a subconscious thing, because nobody's like, oh, please sign me up for a life of hurt and heartache. Like, nobody's doing that. It's a subconscious thing of, oh, I'm used to this. This is how my mother was, or this is the dynamic that I had with my father. And so this parent is not emotionally available. So here I am as a child, I'm going to twist myself into a pretzel to try to earn their love, but their love is very conditional, and it varies from moment to moment. And so that's where that anxious style of attachment comes in. So as an adult, when you're dating and you get that, if that's not resolved, then we're seeing kind of these emotionally unavailable people as, oh, this is a challenge, or this is somehow a puzzle for me to solve, or this is somehow workable, instead of realizing this person's emotionally unavailable and can't give me what I need, so I need to drive on. Yep. The other side of that is if you have a narcissist who is seemingly very emotionally available and who does a lot of that intensity early on, oh, I'm calling you, I'm texting you. And again, all relationships go through some degree of this, but it's that level of intensity. It's texting and calling multiple times a day. It's, I want to make you my whole world kind of thing. And you're feeling so loved and appreciated and accepted and valued and all of these things that for a person with that anxious style of attachment hasn't felt possibly ever. These kinds of relationships early on can feel like a soulmate connection. They can feel healthy. Mm-hmm. And then when that phase enters into that power struggle phase, which again, all relationships do, that's when people start getting real, you know, and you start seeing people with, they're settling in. You see them with morning breath. You're seeing their level of impatience. You're seeing them, you know, kind of flaws and all, like, you know, they're not trying to impress so much. And but for the person with BPD or an anxious style attachment, or even somebody that's not aware that relationships have cycles, which, I mean, really, which one of us was right before this, right? Then we're thinking, oh no, they're starting to take me for granted. They don't seem to care as much, because we're making the mistake of thinking that initial idealization phase was somehow real and that we did something to lose it. And so now we're in this mad scramble to get it back. Mm-hmm. And if you get, so this is when you have, especially a BPD who starts again, working overtime. I'm going to be sexier. I'm going to be louder. I'm going to be more of this. I'm going to keep all of your attention. Love me, love me. And if that narcissist starts pulling away, which they do because they're avoidant, that triggers that BPD even more. And so now they're even more frantic. And this can result in stalking, obsessive behavior, just absolute feelings of unhingedness of, I need to get this person back. What did I do? What don't you like about me? Let me know what you don't like about me. I'll change it. I'll change it. I'll change anything about me as long as you just don't leave. And so that's that dynamic, especially with a pathological, deeply pathological.
Be right back.
Okay. With a deeply pathological narcissist who's malicious and intentional, these relationships can and often do wind up in like a murder or a murder suicide. So you have that narcissist who's pulling away, who enjoys, especially if they're sadistic, if they enjoy watching the BPD or the person with that anxious style of attachment twist in the wind, and they enjoy seeing, oh, look, this person's blowing up my phone. They're texting, they're calling. Look how significant I am. And so they're enjoying doing that. They'll bring you to the highest high and then drop you to the lowest low. And that's problematic. So with that said, that the wondering if you're the narcissist, like Angie said, if you're wondering that, then you most likely aren't, because narcissists don't stop to wonder if there's ever a problem with them. But that doesn't mean to say that there aren't imbalances within you that are worthy of being addressed. I would say the vast majority of us, if not everybody, there are imbalances within our personalities, because we grow, if we don't grow up in a dysfunctional family, we grow up in a dysfunctional society. And it's good to kind of go through and comb all that stuff out and figure it out. So I remember when I was doing my red flags videos, there were a few of them where I'm reading them out loud and I'm like, I feel like I'm describing myself. Like, it was really unsettling and scary. And it was having to do that reality check of, okay, am I good? Like, it's not me, right? Like, I have empathy. I have remorse. Okay. I'm good. But
I get it.
Yeah. There were still things within me that I needed to work on, and there still are, because it's,
we all do. Nobody's perfect.
So that was a long answer. I apologize. Please don't apologize.
That was a great answer. I have another question, but do you have another question? I can't remember who went last.
I picked that question, but I do have a question from last week, but you can go whatever you want to do.
No, go ahead.
Okay. This is from Sarah, who says, mm-hmm. Is there a form of narcissism in entertainers?
Oh yeah. Okay. So obviously anyone could be a narcissist, but I think, you know, there's a thing called acquired situational narcissism, where someone who might not have otherwise been narcissistic suddenly gets famous or rich or high status or whatever, and they become a narcissist. There have been several studies done. I did a video on it a week or two ago, but it's a real thing. I think even if a person wasn't already a narcissist. But with that being said, I don't think every entertainer is a toxic narcissist, right? Because narcissism is a spectrum, as we've talked about before. Everybody has a little bit of narcissism. The fact that we get up in the morning and we get our clothes on and we eat some food, or that's showing self-interest, which in my opinion, and not just my opinion, I mean, the fact is that narcissism at its most basic level is self-interest, right? But when we get into the toxic levels of it, then we see the lack of empathy, lack of remorse, and behaving from that perspective. So that's what I have to say about that. Dana, thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's interesting, the kind of the acquired situational narcissism. Mm-hmm. In certain situations, I think there's probably a personality type that tends to be drawn towards center stage, and kind of narcissists do tend to have a very fragile self-image, and they need that constant validation of, you know, am I important? Am I relevant? Am I attractive? Like, I need, you know, needing that constant stream of reassurance that comes from with outside of themselves. And so, yeah, I think you probably have a disproportionate amount of people that would rank high on the scale of narcissism that get into the entertainment field. And then there's also people, I would say even like the most normal, balanced, humble, you know, grounded person out there, if you're in a situation where you go and you, I've seen this on YouTube, I'm sure you have too, Angie, people that go, that have a video that goes way viral. And now all of a sudden they're on Ellen, they're getting, you know, they're on shows, whatever. And then they crack, like they just can't handle it because it's just too much.
Yeah.
You know, or I don't know. I think that much money, that much fame, that much power, it's going to, it would be hard for anybody to really kind of keep 2 feet on the ground. It's going to make you weird to some level because you don't share the same realities the rest of us. Right. I mean, it would be weird being like Elon Musk or Tom Cruise and going on vacation and you can't relate to like 99.95% of the people, and you go on vacation and maybe you rent out the whole island, you know, like it's just gonna, you don't have the same issues as other people. So
that's right. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. It's going to make you weird.
Yeah. Something you said reminded me of something I wanted to say and now I lost it. Oh, well, it doesn't matter. Okay. Oh, I thought of it. Okay. So there's a particular YouTuber that I won't mention any names because I don't do that, but this one has a certain amount of success for sure. And, but not like, I wouldn't say like, you know, bazillions or anything, or even millions. But this person, or even a million, but this person, there's an article attached to them that says they are the most influential person on the internet. And the article is published on a site called Digital Journal. And back in the day when I was starting my business, I used to do some freelance writing gigs, and one of them was on Digital Journal. And so I know how that site rolls. And what it turns out is that either that person or their PR person probably wrote that article. And I found that to be odd and interesting. That's all I have to say about it. I'm not saying it's a narcissism thing. I'm just saying it reminded me of that situation. Anyway, moving on. Sorry about that. Okay. I have a question. Are you ready?
Yes. Yes. Go for it.
Okay. White Fox says, me and my kids try to be quiet until he wakes up just to avoid him. And he sleeps late. He's sleeping now. We avoid contact and conversations with him just to keep the peace. And I just wanted to say about that, it's not even a question so much as a comment, but I wanted to say this. I've been there. I've done that. It sucks. I tried to keep a baby quiet. you shouldn't have to live like that. And your kids, they shouldn't have to live like that. So I don't know what your situation is, and I'm sure that there's a reason that you're still there. But from one mom to another, take care of yourself and do your best to do what you can. I'm not pushing you to anything, but I feel you deeply on this, and I know it's hard and painful, and it seems normal, but it isn't normal.
Yeah.
Don't forget. Dana, thoughts on that?
Yeah. And, you know, I think so many of us get caught up in the trap of, what is the word I'm looking for? Compromise. Right. And we think we're being reasonable. We think we're being respectful. We think we're being polite and considerate. And really, it's walking on eggshells.
Yes.
And there's a difference between walking on eggshells and being considerate and compassionate and caring. And things like this, like, it's one thing. I get it. Right. If your significant other's like, hey, I work however many hours a week and I'm exhausted and we've got little kids and I'm not getting any sleep and I'm just tired and pandemic stress is stressful and I really just need to sleep in. Okay, that may or may not be reasonable. If you have a 6-month-old, there's only so much anybody can do with that because a 6-month-old dictates everything at that point. But coming up with some sort of compromise of, okay, maybe we can, it's some sort of reasonable compromise, but if it's to the point of continually walking on eggshells and we're afraid of making, you know, any noise or doing anything because of consequences, because this person's going to rage, they're going to do silent treatment, they're going to belittle, they're going to start cussing, all of that. That's walking on eggshells.
Yep.
You know, but if the kids are old enough, it's okay to just say, okay, that's family rules. You know, mom or dad wants to sleep in on Sundays until, you know, 9 or 10.
Yeah.
That's different.
Right. Yeah. And what she's literally saying is they're trying to be quiet to avoid spending time with him because he's so mean. I mean, she's literally saying it.
Oh, and that
is, I've been there. I've done that. It's terrible. It's a horrible feeling to feel like that in your own home. And that's all I'm saying. I'm saying, I get it. It's horrible. And I'm sorry you're there, but please really recognize that this is not normal. And that when you're in that situation, please do not think I am in any way criticizing you, because believe me, I do get it. But when you're in that situation, your children, they start to think it's normal. And then either they end up with somebody like him, or they become somebody who's with somebody like him. And you don't want that. Yeah.
Yeah. Fear is never a normal emotion to feel in a relationship.
No,
fear of consequences, fear of punishment, fear of
stress, even
stress, fear of your life. Fear of being verbally or physically or emotionally abused. Like none of that's within the realm of normal or reasonable or workable.
Mm-mm. I totally agree. Yeah. Yeah. All right, Dana, you got another one for us?
Yes, I did. Where did it go? This is from, here we go. Embers Firewalker says, hey, Angie and Dana, I need suggestions to ask my ADHD/OCD, so attention deficit disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder housemate, to give me peace, especially while cooking. Her nonstop nervous talking triggers my PTSD. She rarely respects my boundaries.
Ooh, okay. Well, I don't have OCD, but I do have ADHD. So I will tell you this. From my personal perspective, I actually am not usually an overtalker, but every now and then I have my moments. Maybe you could ask the roommate to kindly give you space while you cook, or you could cook at a time that, you know, the roommate isn't available, or you could get a different roommate, or skip the roommate. I don't know. But I think it's going to be, you know, you're going to have to try to have the conversation. And if you have already had the conversation and it's not helping, then I think you have other things to consider. I'm guessing you have a roommate for the financial benefits of such. And I would say if it's your place and it's really becoming an issue that you're consistently triggered by, then you might really just want to consider finding a different roommate and asking that one to move out. You'll have to follow whatever eviction laws are legal in your state, you know. But Dana, you probably have some better suggestions on this. What are your thoughts?
Well, I agree with you in terms of maybe it's good to start looking for another roommate. I don't know whose house it is or who's on the lease or, you know, whatnot. But in the meantime, if you do have a conversation with her about it, I would encourage you to make it about, to put it on you instead of putting it on her. So what I mean by that is, instead of approaching her and saying, hey, your nonstop nervous talking is really triggering me, that's either going to make her, it's probably going to make things worse. So especially if she has OCD, so that could really send her anxiety into orbit. And I have to sneeze. Hold on a second.
Okay. Bless you.
Thank you. So instead of saying something like that, you might want to phrase it in terms of, let's just call her Jane. So Jane, I'm doing a new thing now. When I cook, I'm trying to just kind of make it my time where I unwind, and this is just part of my self-care routine. And I'm going to listen to some video. This is my time to unwind. And so I'm going to listen to an audiobook, or I'm going to listen to some YouTube videos and chill out. So if I don't respond to you, I don't mean to be rude, but I just need this time to just kind of unwind and decompress. And then that way she's not going to feel attacked, because more likely than not, if it's nervous, nonstop talking, that's really not within her control. And if she rarely respects boundaries, she's probably not going to start.
Right. That's valid.
So you're kind of working within the parameters of what you got.
Use earbuds or some, or exactly. earbuds or whatever. That's a great idea. Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. Good, Dana. All right. I think I have one. Wait a minute. Okay. Well, that's a comment. Wait a minute. Okay. Nope, I don't have anything. I'm finding it right now. Hold up.
Okay. I'm scrolling too.
Oh, this is interesting. From Embers. My abusive socio ex called himself a wizard, and he definitely did black magic on me, although he would never see it himself. He had those dead eyes when lying to me, especially, and EMDR helped remove the dark. That's interesting. I do think there are some people who, I don't really know what I think about that. I think I'm just going to, I think I've seen people who have some, maybe they have the ability to manipulate our energy really strongly. And I do know that there was one situation where my ex said something about, I was thinking about a name, a person, and that he didn't know, and that I really didn't even know, was a conversation I had with someone else. Mm-hmm. And he turned to me and said, you know, well, who's that? And he mentioned the name of the person. Let's say it was Bob. Who's Bob? Out of the blue. And that creeped me out a lot. But I choose to focus on what I can control. And so I do not stay focused on that sort of thing. But I admit to being the sort of person that does, you know, pop up a bubble of light around myself at any mm-hmm. given moment for the purpose of protection, which I know mm-hmm. is a little woo woo, but it works for me. Oops.
I think it's a good visual. And mm-hmm. you know, I definitely believe in negative and positive energy. And sure. it is a really almost visceral reaction mm-hmm. that I think a lot of us have to that such a low, I don't know, that sounds woo woo, but like low vibrational frequency
to
that negative energy. And there's something there, you know, I guess on a kind of a side note, as far as curses and spells and Satanism and all of that, I watch all these talk shows over the years, and people talk about, oh, there's doing a black mass in the basement, and they were doing this, and you know, there are pentagrams everywhere, and we like so evil, and all of this dark power. And I always thought, like, okay, but at what point do you give up? Because it just doesn't work. Like, it doesn't work. You know, if you were doing a spell to make yourself powerful, to make yourself fly, to do all of that, you would think that you would want some results from that, and there's never been any results from that. It just makes that person feel powerful. I don't know, it's just a big fat waste of time as far as I'm concerned.
So I have a little input on this for you. So mm-hmm. when I was younger, I tried some mm-hmm. things. Mm-hmm. I was a little more woo-woo then. Uh-huh. And I understand today that all of the little candles and incense and little whatever stones and feathers and things that people use, those are just about directing energy. And all energy is energy. And we have that, you know, we know everything's energy, right? And so what I think happens is that if you believe something's going to happen and you keep focusing on that thing and you start to do things to lead toward that thing, one way or another, you may achieve that thing. Law of attraction, basic stuff, right? Mm-hmm. With that being said, I don't believe that it happens just because you do the woo-woo part. I think that the practical part comes in, and there's a lot of psychology involved. So yes. if a person is telling you, I am a wizard, I can do things to you, I can make your life harder and worse, and da, 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 and then you believe them, well, what do you think is going to happen? Yeah. You know what I mean? That's why I choose to not focus on people who tell me things like that. And so far, knock on wood, so good. You know, it's a matter of understanding. But again, I guess I do have a little woo-woo because I do believe in certain things, and I do pop up the light bubble, okay? And I keep it all around my whole house, which I know mm-hmm. sounds weird, but it is a visualization thing. And yeah. all of it, you know, so it's just a matter of mindset. See it however you want to see it, but know that if you don't believe they can do it, they can't touch you. So
yeah, there's a lot to be said for kind of that self-fulfilling prophecy. And yes. that's where that can be concerning. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess I wouldn't give power to any of like that darkness or whatever. I mean, if one of my crazy exes came up to me and said, I'm a wizard and I can do this, I'd be like, no, dude, you're an effing idiot. Like, have no power. You had no power then. You have no power now. You have
be gone. Poof.
Listen to Voldemort. Like, check yourself, because you don't know. You don't grow or change. You're just playing games. You're just playing games. And you've been playing games and just get out of here.
Let them have it. Bye-bye, Voldemort.
I'd be like, you know, I guess if it was me, I'd probably make up something too. Like, oh, you're a black wizard. I'm a white wizard. Like, you know, I don't know.
A purple one. I mean, purple's a magical color.
Purple is a magical color.
I like pink myself. I'm a pink girl, but I do like purple. Okay, sorry.
Yes.
We're getting a little silly.
Yeah, just don't give these people power. When you see them for what they are, when you pull the curtain away and you see the wizard behind the curtain, you realize it's just a sad little pathetic excuse of a human being who never properly developed, and it's tragic in its own right, but they're not this big, powerful, all-knowing Wizard of Oz.
Yes,
they're not.
Absolutely true. Let me say this too, and I just want to pull out this comment from Nicole Angelina. Hello, by the way. Hello. She says, if you feel that he cast a spell on you, then do a cord cutting ceremony. And I'm into that, actually. I'm into mm-hmm. that because there are rituals that do make you feel, there are good rituals out there, you know, whether you're in church and you're doing your candle lighting or your communion or whatever you're doing, or in this case, a cord cutting ceremony. The symbolism, the visualization, all of that is, it works. And so regardless of whether you call it magic or psychology or intention or law of attraction or whatever, it works. Follow it if it works for you. But don't allow yourself to be, just like Dana said, bye-bye Voldemort. Okay.
Yeah, you know? Not today, Voldemort. Not today.
Dying. Okay, that's really funny. I'm sorry. That was a good one. All right. Yes, indeed. Okay, moving on.
Back to the energy, the cord cutting thing. I absolutely agree with you that there's power in that. I'm a huge fan of visualizations. It's putting a mask on to the monster of whatever it is that we're fighting. I do this with anxiety. I do this with depression. I do this with eating disorders. It's a fantastic tool to kind of to make it into, to kind of give it its own space and to get very clear with yourself. Okay, what are these cords feel like? How long are they? What size are they? What color are they? All of these things, and in releasing them and either sending them back up into everything that is good and right with the world, or just kind of tying them off like you would a balloon and then letting them go, or however you, or just cutting it and letting it go like a, you know, like when you pull back a measuring tape and it just sucks it all back in like that. And it just goes all right back to them. However you do it.
Yeah. Let me tell you something. I've talked to you about this before. I remember when, at the very moment that I realized, and this is back in the day, I'm not going to tell the whole story, but long story short, there was a situation in which my mother did something terrible that caused me to go no contact with her forever before I even understood what I was doing. And what that was, it doesn't matter. But the point is, I remember in the moment, there was a specific moment. I remember exactly where I was sitting, what I was wearing, everything in the room, all the things. And there was a specific moment at which I realized what happened. It hit me. Oh my God, it was my mother. And I like physically felt a cord break, and like it snapped right off. It was the cord of obligation, I always say, right? But that feeling, that connection to her that I had always been unable to release, even though she was really not that nice to me, and that's an understatement, it was instantly broken in that moment. And it was because it was a huge betrayal that involved my children. You can't mess with my family, you know what I'm saying? So, right. But so I do see, on some level, so I don't want to discount, I guess, what I'm saying, I don't want to discount your beliefs and your feelings, because I do believe there is something more than we see and understand. So I don't want to imply that just because I said this can't be a thing, or just because we laughed about Voldemort, which I think is hilarious. Yeah. not today, Voldemort. I'm sorry. But just because we did that, I don't want you to think that we're discounting your experiences or invalidating your experiences. I think that's really important. But I do know for sure that if you don't allow yourself to believe that they can affect you, then they cannot directly affect you. Watch that movie, The Skeleton Key, up to the point at which she still doesn't believe it. Anyway. Okay. Dana, any more thoughts?
Yeah. This is a comment from Druid here. It says magical thinking versus observable reality. And yes, that is a thing. And the psychology behind that, I mean, it can really get a person all tangled up in magical thinking, and it's easy to slip into. And Angie, I'm so glad that you brought up the point that you just made about not wanting to discount anybody's reality. If anybody gets tangled up in that thinking, kind of in that magical thinking or the magical thinking of somebody else, it's easy to do. Mm-hmm. So, but being aware that it is a thing and that there are different really valid psychological principles at work behind this, it demystifies the process and you can kind of see it more readily for what it is. And then when you do see it for what it is, you're able to see the little man behind the curtain kind of a thing. There's one of the terms that comes to mind is the term called pareidolia, and it's seeing kind of patterns or meaning out of things that aren't there. So for example, let's say you hear a song on the radio and you think, okay, well, this means this, maybe the sign is stop. The song is Stop in the Name of Love or something, right? And you interpret that to have significant meaning to you. And you're like, okay, well, this means that I need to break up with this person. Or maybe you attribute the meaning to be, I need to call my ex. So we're interpreting these outside stimuli and making our own meaning with them, but we're interpreting this meaning that's not there. It's kind of our subconscious mind projecting things onto it. And this happens in all different ways where we see patterns in things that aren't there. We see, you know, you see the Virgin Mary on a piece of toast. That's a form of pareidolia. It happens in all ways, shapes, and forms. And, you know, some people have it to stronger degrees than others, but just recognizing that that is a thing and it is magical thinking. It's a form of magical thinking, and magical thinking is basically misattributing cause and effect. So it's thinking that we have more that we have more influence over events than we really do. So it's like the example I gave earlier. If I wear my favorite sweatshirt to an ice hockey game and my team wins, then I think, oh, it's because it's my lucky sweatshirt had something to do with it. And it didn't. Like there's a right. difference between causation and correlation. Mm-hmm. And, when you're around illogical people, this is how it can be so easy to get sucked into it, because if people aren't, I mean, again, who's aware of this kind of stuff until it happens to them, you know? But if you're not aware of it and you've got somebody who's telling you, no, I'm all powerful, they're planting the seed. And most people, I would say the vast majority of people that get tangled up with narcissists are highly suggestible to begin with. Mm-hmm. And they continue to be so because a lot of them are normal and decent people. And a lot of them have significant unexamined vulnerabilities. And then you've got a person who's telling you all kinds of wild stuff. And every now and again, reality seems to line up with it, right? So they're telling you, I'm this all powerful wizard. I control life and death. And the next thing you know, a deer runs out and you hit it with the car, mm-hmm. right? It might be easy to misattribute that and think, oh my gosh, we were just talking about this. Therefore, the fact that I just hit an animal and killed it, this means that, yes, they are in fact over life and death. And especially if they take credit for it and they're like, see, I am all powerful. I control life or death. You be careful, because that could be you someday.
Yeah. Yeah. So, ooh-wee. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Dana, for that. That's absolutely on point. So much great stuff in our chat today. So guys, just want to remind you, anything that we didn't get to today, please, you know, we'll try to scroll back through the chat, but definitely put them in the comments below this video when it is officially posted, which will be as soon as YouTube allows it to post. We never know what that'll be. And then, you know, this has been a really great discussion. Are you guys, tell me, Dana.
Oh, there's so many times, this is off topic. There's so many times, Angie, I fall down these holes in YouTube and I'm like, oh my gosh, Angie and I should totally do that. That would be so much fun, because we're so alike, but we're so different
right. In
so many ways. And I'm like, this would, like, I had the idea the other day, I was watching this show, my new favorite show on YouTube. It's Unsolved by BuzzFeed.
Yes, I like that one.
Freaking hilarious. I love those guys. And I'm like, man, Angie and I should go do a ghost hunting show and go
that
all over.
So fun. Let's travel.
It's so unrelated, but so, but it would be fun.
We'll start a new channel.
Yeah. You know.
But I do think it might be kind of fun to discuss this whole magic thing sometime, like as it relates to what we do.
I would love to. I'm all for that kind of stuff. You know, one of my great heroes, and I'm still so, it makes me want to cry that I never wrote him a letter just letting him know what an amazing human being he was. But James Randi, who was a magician turned debunker, and he was all about protecting the general public from flat out charlatans, more so than anything. But there's a lot of people out there that I don't think are charlatans. They just get tangled up in it, and they really believe that this something has more power than not. But there's all kinds of, you know, it's not just a harmless belief system. It can, people have done all kinds of, it's led them astray in a lot of ways. So
yeah, totally. So if you guys are interested in us having a discussion about that and in joining us about that, please let us know in the chat or in the comments below when this video posts. Also, really quickly, we have a super chat from Jonathan. Thank you, Jonathan, who says, for survivors, stay strong. And he's 2 months and 1 week free of his toxic narcissist. Jonathan, congratulations. Stay strong, my friend. I know it's hard. And I'm proud of you. And thank you for the super chat.
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
Yeah. How about, let's do that next week. Let's talk more about like magical thinking and beliefs, and I'll start digging up some stuff on it now and send it to you.
Right on. Perfect. Okay. That sounds great. Right. All right, guys, we'll see you next week over on Dana's channel, Thrive After Abuse, right here on YouTube. Make sure that you subscribe to this channel and hit the bell notification, and to that channel and hit the bell notification. And you can text Angie Live, all one word, to 33222 to be texted before the sessions, anytime I personally go live with or without Dana. And Dana, yours is what?
The number to see me live, it's Dana Live, all one word, to the number 22999.
Okay. All right. So we will see you next week over on Dana's channel, approximately the same time, which is 12:30 Central, 1:30, what is it?
Eastern.
Mm-hmm. I'm time zone challenged. Mm-hmm. All right. We'll see you then. Dana, thank you so much. This has been a fun one today.
Yeah, it has. Right. Take care. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you. Oh, and Jack Lumen and Hufflemom, thank you. I appreciate both of you taking your wrenches, and thank you for being here, and you too, Bonnie, and all my other people. Okay, see you soon. All right, bye-bye.
Bye.